Welcome to the Sober Living Rocks podcast. I'm your host, Esther Nagel, and today I'm speaking with Joe DeRosa of Quantum Sobriety. With over 15 years of yoga and meditation teaching experience, Joe now runs one of the UK's most magical retreat centres and is founder of Quantum Sobriety. This revolutionary addiction program gives you permission to drop the story and create a new reality as if you'd never been addicted, all based on her own journey to freedom. Do you feel trapped and alone, stuck behind the mask alcohol gives you to get through life? Do you worry that sobriety would give you no coping strategies for those tough times and leave you further isolated in a boring, joyless life? The Sober Living Rocks podcast is here to show you that sobriety can be a joyful, transformational journey to a life of growth, truth, connection and inner peace. Join me, Esther Nagel, and my guests as we explore the gift sobriety brings and the tools we use to get us there. Hi, Joe, and thank you for joining me today on the Sober Living Rocks podcast. How are you?
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's wonderful to be here.
It's so cool to be speaking with you again. We met, of course, through Damsels in Success, the women's business and personal development organization.
Yep, we did.
We've spoken a couple of times, and it's really nice to be connecting with you here today now. So thank you. Thank you very much. You were just saying your Quantum Sobriety is a year old now.
It is 1 year old, yes. We've actually been running the residential retreats for 3 years, but the online program and the new branding and the new website is 1 year old now. So the online program is going into its second year tomorrow. So it's very exciting.
That is very exciting. And I've seen from the testimonials on your website, you've gotten some, people are getting some amazing results through working with you.
Yeah. Well, I get quite a lot of I feel reborn comments. I get quite a lot of those. Yeah, I mean, you couldn't really ask for more.
No, that's amazing. That must make you feel really good.
Yeah. No, it's a total privilege. It's a total privilege to work with people on this level, and in this depth, for them to really get into what's underneath the addiction, what's underneath the substance, really, and to get to the nitty gritty of it all, what's driving the addiction. And it's a total privilege.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm sure you'll be able to tell us a little bit more about that later on. But first of all, would you mind giving us the sort of edited highlights of your journey through your addiction and your recovery and how you've come to be doing what you're doing now?
I realised when I was 40 that I had never been on holiday and been sober. I'd never ever gone abroad and had a holiday and been sober. It shocked me to the core, absolutely shocked me to the core. So I started smoking in my early teens. I started to take drugs when I was 17. And I became a coke addict when I was 21, and I had to leave the UK to get away from my cocaine addiction, and I went to Thailand, which was a pretty stupid place to go because I literally found it as soon as I got there, and had 6 years in Thailand where I was doing a lot of cocaine, a lot of ecstasy, and smoking 40 cigarettes to boot every day as well. So cigarettes and drugs is kind of where it started. And then I came, and then I had to leave Thailand. So after 6 years of drugging in Thailand, I had to leave there to get away from the addiction. So I came back to the UK. But I came back in 2006, and I didn't come back to where I had lived. I came back to a completely new area. And that made it a little bit easier for me because I didn't have the same people and the same dealers and the same situation, so it did make it slightly easier. But what I didn't know back then in 2006 was what was driving the addiction. So I replaced drugs for alcohol. So I basically started drinking a shed load of red wine, and it really didn't agree with me at all. And I couldn't sleep. I thought I was an insomniac. I got very angry, and things just kind of went downhill. At that time, I literally had no money at all. I was scraping. I was literally the money that I had, I was spending on booze. I mean, it was really, really, really quite desperate. And then I started a business at that time, which failed, and I went bankrupt in 2009. And I remember the night before I went bankrupt, it was a Tuesday evening, and I was teaching meditation, and all I could think about as I was teaching this meditation class was, I can't wait to get over to the supermarket to buy some wine, because the following morning at 9 a.m. I had to be at the court to go bankrupt. It was one of the lowest points of my life, to be teaching and to not really be there at all, to be completely wanting to be somewhere else, wanting to be drunk, wanting to numb out from what I was feeling. It was probably that Tuesday evening was the lowest point. And then Wednesday morning, I stepped through the door into bankruptcy, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I could just kind of let go of all of that debt and that old business that didn't work. And it was, it was a really, really brand new start for me that day. And I went bankrupt 09/09/09 at 9 a.m. and obviously, as many of us know, that nine is the end of a cycle. Yeah. And so I kind of, it really, I didn't know that back then, but now I can really see that it was just the end of a cycle. And I stepped through to a one energy, yeah, a new feeling energy, and that really was that day was the beginning of the rest of my life, and it enabled me without the stress of the debt and that business that was driving the debt. It allowed me to start fresh again. So I've had a lot of fresh starts. So leaving England, going to Thailand was a fresh start. Leaving Thailand, coming back to England was a fresh start. And then 3 years after that, the bankruptcy was a fresh start. So I've had lots of fresh starts, but that one was the one that really set in stone my future. Although I still drank for 3-4 years. But I was on a real journey in that time to get to the bottom of the addiction, and sort of I wrote my first book as I was taking my last drink. I wrote the book in 2011, and I actually was chronicling my last drink, which I didn't know at the time, but I was actually writing it at that time, and so the first chapter, which is the chapter about addiction, was actually me taking my last drink. But unfortunately, I went back to drinking, and the following year I went back to drinking, and I was like, oh, I've not had a drink for 5.5 months. Oh, I'm safe to have a drink for, I can have a drink. It's I can do it. There's a helicopter going past. I'm safe to have one drink because I've had 5.5 months of sobriety. So I'm safe. And I went through that. I think most addicts probably go through that. I think you kind of have to, I think most people have to go through that feeling of, I can now moderately drink. And so I had a drink and I thought, oh, I can control this. I can control this. And then 2 weeks later, I was drinking more than I was before I stopped drinking. So I had 5.5 months sober in 2011. I had 6 months of drinking in 2012, and then I stopped drinking finally October 2012.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's been like a, ooh, topsy-turvy journey. Yeah. Of drugs, of partying, of raving, of dancing all night, of, oh my God. I mean, it's been of bankruptcy, of Thailand, of, I mean, it's, I've done a lot of partying. I've had a lot of fun. I've had a lot of highs, but ultimately I always went for the high drugs. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really like getting stoned. Although I my ex-partner was a puff junkie, and I didn't really like that because I didn't like the downer drugs. I liked the up drugs, but I don't really know why alcohol was good for me, because it was a down drug, but it got a real hold over me for 6 years. It got a massive hold over me. Sort of teaching yoga drunk was one of my down points and my low times of life. There have been a few.
Actually drunk when you were drunk in the class.
I was drinking the night before and I was also taking mushrooms. And then I went home and literally got changed and drove my motorbike. This was in Thailand. Drove my motorbike sort of, I don't know, half an hour, which was just totally irresponsible of me. Wow. And then I was teaching my morning class, and I hadn't had any sleep, and I couldn't stand up properly.
Good grief. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, horrible. I mean, horrible, horrible. And then drove back again, and drove back to where I was living again. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just the things that you do when you are under the influence is shocking. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
And totally shocking.
Yeah, and then you look back, and you sometimes wonder how on earth you managed to survive through them.
Absolutely.
Plenty of moments when you think, God, there's obviously...
I think I'm really lucky. Mm. Really. Not to have, I mean, I've had a few injuries, a few alcohol related injuries, but I'm really lucky. A few broken bones down to booze, but I'm really, really lucky not to have had anything worse happen to me, for sure.
Yeah, gosh, it's strange, isn't it? I mean, you were teaching yoga while hiding, so yoga, which is supposed to put us in touch with who we are and help us to deal with our emotions, but you were still absolutely so deep in your addictions that you were doing this, teaching while still under the influence. That's quite remarkable part of the story.
Yeah. It's, I mean, before I found yoga, I was in an abusive relationship. We were weekend cocaine junkies. I mean, we literally couldn't go for a weekend without having cocaine. And I was desperately unhappy. I mean, unbelievably unhappy. But I had my self-esteem was so low that I couldn't imagine. I knew I wanted to get out of that relationship, but I didn't know how I could get out of that relationship. And that was when yoga came along and gave me the confidence to begin to change my life. So I was really, really low in the beginning. And then I found yoga, and yoga lifted me up. But it took a long time to be able to get to the point where I said goodbye to the abusive relationship. I said goodbye to the drugs, and then goodbye to the drink. It was a real journey to get to that point of saying goodbye to it all, and ultimately where I am now, where I'm literally living the dream.
Yeah.
It's a journey. It's not, oh, I'm going to make this decision, it's going to happen. Boom!
No.
It doesn't happen like that. I mean, certainly for me, it was a very, very long journey. But then I did the journey in my own way, like you have. It's not a template that I followed from somebody else, because I didn't fit into those other templates that were out there. I didn't fit into what was the regular detox that was out there. It didn't suit me. I had to find my own way, which was yoga got me into my body, and then once I was really into my body, I got up into my mind, and then really the meditation took hold, and that's my real journey and my real love. I mean, obviously yoga still plays a part, but it's meditation, and became a Buddhist 11 years ago. So not that I'm teaching Buddhism, but that's sort of, the yoga and the Buddhism is so similar.
Yeah.
I mean, both come from India, so they're kind of rooted in a very similar philosophy. But yeah, it's been a long journey.
You certainly seem to be loving your life now. I mean, I know we connected on Facebook, and I see what you're sharing on Facebook. It seems like you have the most incredible, like you said, living the dream. Your life is so far removed from what it was 10 years ago when you were, you know, and back then, can you imagine if you had told Joe the party girl, Joe the raver, that you would be living this life of inner peace and clean living and getting up in the morning and doing your meditation every day and helping people to survive? Would you have imagined, could you have ever imagined that you would be doing this now, living this life?
Well, it was my dream. It was, even back then, it was my dream. As soon as I discovered yoga, I had two personas. So I had Party Joe and Yoga Joe. Mm-hmm. And so I started off 100% Party Joe, and I'm now 100% Yoga Joe. And so the journey over all of those years, I mean, 20 years really, has been the journey from Party Joe to Yoga Joe. So I think it was always in there, but now I am 100% this person that I always dreamed that I could be. But quantum sobriety, the tagline to quantum sobriety is create a reality. A reality is if you've never been addicted. And now when I look back on Party Joe, I can't, it is like it's a different person. Mm. And certainly when I was Party Joe, when I used to think about Yoga Joe, it didn't seem real. It was like it would happen to a different person. So it's, yeah, it's it was always part of me, but equally it is amazing to be here now. And yeah. And quantum sobriety is literally just me sharing the journey that I've taken from one to the other.
That's amazing. I can completely identify with that idea of the two parts, the two very separate identities. I was drinking, I used to have Fantasy Esther in my head, and I would talk about Fantasy Esther, who was living this life that I desperately wanted but was a million miles away from, and then realized as I was progressing through my yoga journey that I was actually becoming a Fantasy Esther. That actually a Fantasy Esther wasn't Esther, a Fantasy Esther. Fantasy Esther was Esther, but yeah. a different side of me. So yeah, it's and now I, like you, I look back and I think, God, who was that? Who was that person that I once was? Yeah. And wow, what an amazing, amazing part of our lives that past is. I was talking with Nicola O'Hanlon, who I was speaking to earlier on this morning, and for a different episode, and we were talking then about how, you know, the paths that we come along, all the bits that hurt and that are painful and that are really hard, how much they are the crucial aspects to our journey. And how, you know, like you your bankruptcy and your addiction and your journey there has created the 100% yoga Joe that you are now. And without all that, you wouldn't be where you were. Our past shapes us so much all the time, and our present is shaping future us. So it's exciting to think where we're going to be in another 10 years' time. What are you going to be doing?
But I'd never be able to do what I do now and to pay it forwards and to help others to do this, to kind of join me in freedom. I could never do that if I hadn't have experienced it myself, because we have a very, very active forum and a private forum, and people are really struggling, and so many of the members say, my God, Joe, how do you know what to say to these people? Because I just don't, I don't comment because I don't know what to say to them. And it's only because I've been there and I know exactly how they feel. And I know how to take that step from A to B, that I know exactly what to say, and I effortlessly know what to say because I've been there, and I would never be able to do that if I hadn't have had the abusive relationship and the bankruptcy and the debt and the problems and the fear and the lack and the despair and the remorse and the regret, and to really have stood in those shoes myself. If I hadn't have done that, then how on earth would I had no right to help others do that. I mean, absolutely no right at all. But because I have, and I know how to drop the frigging story, drop the story and create a new one.
That's really powerful. It we do create our reality, don't we? I mean, the world out there is going to do whatever it does, but what is going on inside you is entirely created by you. And I love that drop the story. That is so powerful, because once you realize that it is just a story that you're telling yourself, and that whole I am, I think it was probably in Damsels that I first heard this, that the two most powerful words in the English language are I am, because what you put after I am creates your reality. So if you tell yourself I am a hopeless addict, that's what you're going to be. Whereas if you tell yourself I am moving forward, I am creating a better life for myself, or whatever you're going to tell yourself, if you can make that a positive I am, then you can move towards that positive I am.
Totally. And I think a huge part of this is a belief that you don't deserve happiness, freedom, sobriety, that there's an element of punishment of whatever has gone on in the past, whether that is childhood stuff or relationship stuff or stuff with children or whatever, that there seems to be a wound. There's something underneath, and the substance is a plaster that covers up the wound and it stops us from feeling it. But it's not actually about the substance at all. It's about what's underneath, what's driving the addiction in the first place. And so you can't move on from this without really taking off the plaster and sitting with what's there. What is driving this? What is creating this situation, this need to numb out, this need to check out, this need to say no to life, this feeling of not being worthy, not deserving happiness and happiness, just not deserving happiness. Mm-hmm. So many of my clients don't believe that they deserve it.
It is. It's a tragedy. It really is, because we're all worthy of the very best that we can get in life. And I think that there is a terrible sort of toxicity in society that has us all questioning if we're good enough, even without childhood trauma or whatever other trauma people come to recovery with. There is that constant telling us we're not enough, you're not good enough, unless, you know, buy this product, have this, you've got to have this to be good enough, to be enough. And it's we do seem to be living in a society that is driven by that fear of not enough, and we seem to be told from a very young age, you need to be better, you need to be better, you need to be more than you are, when that's not true at all. Have you read Gabor Mate's book,
The Realm? I haven't, but I've seen stuff of his online, but I haven't read the book. I'm not very good at reading.
His YouTube, there's a lot of stuff online. Amazing. He talks about trauma and the effects of childhood trauma and how that relates to addiction. And he talks about it, you know, it doesn't have to be big trauma, because when you're a child, something very small, if you don't understand what's happening, or you don't understand that that's not about you, it can traumatize. I don't know who, I heard somebody recently talking, I was on James Wedmore's podcast, Mind Your Business podcast. His co-host Phoebe Morochek was talking about a time that she can remember her mum being late for picking her up from school, and to her childlike mind, that meant that she wasn't important to her mum. Whereas, of course, the reality of it was probably that a mum got delayed in traffic, that, you know, there can be a million and one reasons why, but it would not have been about, oh, I can't be bothered to go and pick Phoebe up. But we make that, and it can only take, it can take a slight second in childhood for something to become so embedded in your brain, you don't even realize it's there. And that can have repercussions and affect self-esteem and feelings of self-worth. So we've got to dig quite deep. I would imagine that the work that your clients do on your course, a lot of it is, it unearths quite a lot of painful stuff, I would imagine. And
oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
And counselling alongside the online programme in the form of the residential retreat, or we have sort of online counselling, is imperative to sit alongside the meditations that we're giving, because stuff's coming up. We're encouraging you to have a look inside and see what's there so that you can heal it. So you need to have some one-to-one support there in place so that you can do that. And we have the residential retreat which happens as well. And one day workshops, and with my team are have also got online counselling, which they offer the community as well. So it's bringing it all together, But funnily enough, I believe my own situation came from a traumatic birth. So I was stuck, and there seems to be lots of helicopters out here today. There must be some army exercise going on in Suffolk. I was stuck, and I was in trouble, and I was pulled out basically by a vacuum, had a big lump on my head. So I was So my very, very first experience of earth, of being alive, was trauma.
Wow.
And so my whole life, I can now look back and I can see my whole life I've put obstacles in my way so that life is not easy. And through childhood, I made it difficult for myself with my parents, who were lovely. I made it difficult for myself. I got myself into an abusive relationship. I mean, I literally all the way through made it more difficult than it needed to be. So the addiction cycle was very easy for me to pick up because it was like a perfect storm for me.
Yeah.
It was like absolutely brilliant. Here we go. I can make life perpetually difficult day in, day out by giving myself an addiction from early teens with smoking. And that's when it started. I mean, I literally was addicted to something from sort of 14 to 40.
Wow, wow. You've got me wondering now, because my parents have always said you always make life really difficult for yourself.
Yeah, find out about your birth.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And of course, we don't think about that, do we? And I mean, the whole process of being born in itself, without any extra complications, but being born has got to be massively traumatic to a child that up until that point has no knowledge of this outside world at all.
It's a blog that I wrote last week, which was I think it was called Tumbling Down the Birth Canal. It was just sort of the parallels of being born and how traumatic that must be for the baby who's in this lovely, lovely, warm, cozy place, and then suddenly is being forced out, and then this unknown place. I mean, how traumatic that must be for a natural birth and an easy birth, and obviously for a traumatic birth where you've got the cord around your neck, where you're nearly strangling, where you're stuck and you're being yanked out, and you're being oxygen deprived. I mean that is majorly, majorly traumatic.
Yeah.
And so the parallel that I was making in last week's blog was that it's very much like when you're in the addictive cycle, it's like that. You're in something, and you know that it's almost like you are in this birth canal, because you're escaping from where you were, but you're not where you want to be, and you're in this kind of in limbo place in between, which is which is very, very traumatic. So I do believe that the journey to sobriety can sometimes feel like being in the birth canal. Yeah. And then when you pop out the other end, hopefully there is some sort of where it's like, oh my God, I'm free.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I've just made a note of that. That sounds like I'm gonna have to read that. That's such an incredible analogy, and it's so true. That whole comfort of the addiction itself, even if it is uncomfortable, it's still comfort that you know it's, you know, I mean, a full size baby, right, just about ready to be born, would probably be quite uncomfortable being all curled up in there. You know, that's squashed and a lot of pressure around you and not much space to move anymore, not much space to grow, and then all that pain. That it's an incredible analogy. And to come out into that unknown, the fear of sobriety as well. The fear of what hell is on the other side of this, and what am I going to do if I can't turn to a drink when I feel stressed and when my life gets too much for me. That's part of what people, you know, the resistance to getting sober is, but how will I cope if I can't have a drink, or whatever else the, you know, whatever it is that we're turning to in our addiction. That's an incredible analogy. I can't wait to read that blog post. That's on the Quantum Sobriety blog, is it?
It is. It's not. No, it's probably not up there yet, because I write a blog every single day.
Oh, in the emails.
So it goes out in an email, to the Daily Motivation people that have signed up. So it goes out to the community. I do sometimes put them on Facebook. I don't know if that one did go on my page. I do sometimes put them on my page. So it may be on my page. But they eventually, there's just so much going on here that I can't get all of my, I write a daily blog. And it needs to be everywhere every day. And it's a conversation that I was having this morning with the team, that how do I get everything across all the platforms every day?
It's really hard. I mean, I'm finding that with this podcast, just trying to share this on, and at the moment I'm only using Facebook, email and Twitter, and that doing that takes 15-20 minutes every day just to share that out. There's such a lot. It can be quite overwhelming sometimes, can't it?
I know, totally.
But if you're sending to your email list, so it's reaching the people who are definitely looking for your help.
No, it is. It's definitely, I don't think I did put it. I'll have to put it on my personal page. It would be on it would be on the Quantum Sobriety Facebook page, which is just a page.
Okay.
So it would be on there, so the blogs get sent to there every day.
Right. Okay, well I'll be able to link to that then in the show notes then that'll take people straight to the Quantum Sobriety page as well, so they can your page and follow you there as well. What prompted the name of Quantum Sobriety? Where does that come from?
I started my program 3 years ago, and it was called Yoga for Addiction. And it was a residential retreat, very similar to, I mean, it's the same format as it is today. And it was, but I there wasn't much actual physical yoga postures. So it was almost like a working title, because people were expecting a yoga retreat, and it wasn't a yoga retreat. There was counselling, and there was meditation and nutrition and so many different things, and so Yoga for Addiction wasn't quite the right name for it. So I started looking for another name, and then the next name was Control Addiction, and so it was called that for about a year. And I didn't like that either, because it's two negative words, and I wanted to have positive words. So that wasn't working. But again, it was a working title, and it was like, what is the name? And I was like, oh my God, I was driving myself crazy. What is the name? What is the name? What is the name? Searching. And the more I kind of tried to bind the name, the more elusive it became. Mm. And then it was actually, It was actually the June new moon in 2015. I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I don't know what time the actual new moon was, if it was at that time or not, but I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I it was one of those moments when you're asleep and you go, quantum sobriety. And I just knew, and it was a download. It didn't come from me. It was something, it was two words that were given to me from I don't know where, from the quantum, on the quantum. And I'd been really interested in quantum physics and the pure potentiality of quantum physics, and been watching What the Bleep Do We Know for 10 years, and absolutely loved that film, and really, really interested in quantum physics. And I just knew at 4 o'clock in the morning, half asleep, I absolutely knew that that was it. So I got out of bed, I came online, and I Googled quantum sobriety, and nobody was putting those two words together. So I sent an email to my web developer, and I bought .com, .co.uk. I got the Facebook, the Twitter, Instagram, got everything. And I just knew. And then I woke up, and then sort of, I don't think I did go back to bed. And then Dom got up, and I said to him, it's quantum sobriety. And I was so excited. I don't get it. And then Nikki came in, our house manager, and I said, quantum sobriety. And she went, I don't get it. And then I messaged my the therapists, and I said, quantum sobriety. And they said, I don't get it. And nobody got it. And I loved it. I loved it because I loved the fact that nobody got it, because it was something new. It was something, and that's what quantum sobriety is. It's a different way of looking at addiction. It's a different way of looking at sobriety. It's freedom in sobriety. So I use that term a lot as well, freedom in sobriety. It's not just sobriety. It's not being a dry drunk. It's being happy in sobriety, freedom in sobriety. And that's what quantum sobriety is. It's about going to the next level. It's the next generation of sobriety. So I just absolutely knew. So I was even more excited that no one got it, because I knew that I was making a new language. And this is what I'm saying to the community all the time, is we are making our own language, because this hasn't been done before. So it's very, 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 very exciting.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that waking up in the middle of the night with the name. That happened to me.
I just knew.
That's incredible. That actually happened to me 3 days after my youngest son was born. And we thought he was going to be a girl, so we didn't have a boy's name. And I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning on the third day after he was born, and I turned to his father and said, Marcus Christian Andrew Nagel, what do you think? And it was like, I've always told him that he must have been telling me in his sleep, in my sleep, my son was telling him. Yeah, and he loves that. Yeah. He loves the idea that he gave me his name. But it is, sometimes your subconscious just does all that, and wherever it came from, wherever it comes from, it's just, you wake up with that clear idea in your head, you know you're onto something, don't you?
I just knew it in my heart. Totally knew it in my heart that it was just gonna be. It was just gonna be. Yeah. And I love it now, and it just seems so normal now.
Yes, yeah. That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. What a fantastic story. That's a branding story to share with the world, isn't it?
And to trust it as well, and the trust, the level of trust that I had with it, because everyone around me was saying, no, Joe, you need to find something that people will understand, because no one will know what quantum sobriety is. It's like, what is quantum sobriety? It doesn't mean anything. You want something that people will understand. And it would have been so easy for me to have listened to that, because there wasn't any support with the name at all. Everyone was saying to me, change the name. It needs to be something that people will understand. And I dug my heels in, because I knew that I had channeled that message from the quantum. I knew that it was given to me. And I was really, really, really just, well, I'm a Taurian. So once I've made up my mind, I've made up my mind. That was it. It was going to be quantum sobriety. And I'm just so glad and ultimately that's what the program is about, is finding your inner truth and living from your truth and listening to those those messages that you get, and that's ultimately what the program is about, is not listening to the outside view of what addiction and what sobriety should look like, but actually looking inside at who you are and into your heart, and what does sobriety mean to you, because your sobriety is different from anyone else's sobriety. We're no one has the same sobriety.
No one has the same of anything. We're all so different.
We can't fit into regular detox, which is kind of what we've been fitting into for the past 80 years, and it might work for some, but it doesn't work for everybody. But there hasn't been, up until it's very exciting times that we live in. It's your testament to that. I'm testament to that. There's lots of new programs and new approaches and new ways of thinking, and it doesn't have to be the one way anymore. And I find that very, very exciting, because it means that the door is open to everybody now. Because if the regular way doesn't work for you, and I get many clients that say I really because regular detox doesn't work for me, and I've tried it for 30 years and it doesn't work for me, I truly believe that I would never ever be able to be sober, and now they are seeing that that's not the case, that there isn't just this one set way, that actually there's lots of different ways, and you need to keep looking for different approaches and different programs and find the one that works for you.
And this is great that you've created this amazing program, and that I didn't realize until recently just how many other paths there are that people can take into recovery. I mean, I thought in the rare moments when I did contemplate, did I need help with an addiction when I was drinking, and there weren't many of those moments, but in those rare lucid moments, normally 3/4 of a bottle of wine down, I thought, well, it's AA or nothing. I always thought it was that or stay drunk, basically. And it's so refreshing to see that there are so many. And obviously, I found my own way through to recovery myself. And to see that there are so many people out there who are creating different tools, who are out there saying, well, this is how I did it, and this is, and you don't need to just do the one path. It's great. I mean, there's a lot of misconception, and I know now that there are misconceptions around the 12 steps and AA, that it's not, you don't have to be a card carrying member of a religious organization to be in it, but there is a stigma, and there's kind of a lot of resistance with a lot of people to more traditional recovery paths, and it's very exciting, like you said, to be there's all these different paths that people can take now, which is, you know, we are all so different. There's a lot of similar themes that I'm seeing from talking to people here now, and I'm sure you see a lot of similarities in people's addiction stories. There are similar emotional issues and similar things that we have in common, but then so many differences as well. It's amazing. Anyone who follows you on Facebook will have seen that you do this cacao ceremony.
Yes.
And I've been, it's one of these things where, you know, think, oh, maybe I ought to just know what this is, because you're not the only person I've seen talking about it, but you are definitely the most enthusiastic person I've seen talking about it. Can you, because to me now, this is just chocolate, but it's obviously not just chocolate. Can you explain the cacao ceremony that you do as part of what you offer?
Well, the chocolate shaman is one of my teachers. He's my mentor, and he has guided me through quantum sobriety and has shared with me lots of amazing shamanic meditations, which is what the Quantum Sobriety Online program is made up of. And it's sort of, I mean, obviously it's influenced from lots of different places, but there's a lot of his meditations that he's shared with me that are part of the program. And he's American. He lives in Guatemala. He came to the UK and did a world, well, he came to Europe and did a world tour in 2013, and we just opened the retreat centre then, and we were looking for people to hold retreats, and he was looking for a venue. So a friend of mine said, "Oh, do you want to do a cacao ceremony?" And we said, "Yeah, brilliant." And Dom, we since realised, was a chocoholic, a sugar addict. And so he's been on his own journey into being totally clean and a clean chef and from sugar addict. And so we had Keith, the chocolate shaman, come to the retreat centre in 2013. And we were introduced to the cacao and the cacao ceremonies then. And he talks about the science of it and the medical benefits and how amazing this stuff is. And so we started to sell it, and we started to offer cacao ceremonies ourselves. So we've had one this morning. So on a Tuesday morning, we have a cacao ceremony, and I teach meditation. And then on Wednesday mornings, we have cacao ceremony and I teach yoga. And it basically opens your mind up to what is possible. So it's connecting you to the heart as well. So you're getting more connected to consciousness and better able to let go of the drama. So it's a massive help with addiction, because as long as you don't get addicted to it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it helps because it connects you to your truth. And ultimately that's what the QS program is about, is connecting you to your truth. And so it facilitates that. But you do have to be careful not to get addicted to it. And I'm talking in the realms of caffeine. Theobromine, which is the active compound in cacao, is similar to, it's very good for your heart, whereas caffeine is not good for your heart. A lot of caffeine can damage your heart. Theobromine is very good for your heart. But it does have the same kind of stimulation effect, and you can get addicted to it in the same kind of way. So we're very careful about people not getting addicted to cacao. Mm. But the great thing about this cacao is you can't have too much, because you kind of overdose on it and you get a massive headache or you feel really sick. So you learn early on that you can't keep going, right, keep going like you would do with regular chocolate. Mm. And the shop bought chocolate, like regular sort of Cadbury's type chocolate, has less than 1% of the active compound in it. So the cacao we're using is 100%, and Cadbury's would be less than 1%. Wow. There's a huge, massive difference in what we're using. But what's so great is that you don't have to give up chocolate.
Yes. that's got to be good in anyone's books.
I know. But we do have people in the program who are addicted to food and addicted to sugar. So Dom being a clean chef, we do have a lot of recipes and sugar-free this and sugar-free that. And so you don't have to go without cake. You don't have to go without chocolate. You don't have to go without anything. I mean, he's got a book and it's got pizzas in it and chips. And we've got a deep fat fryer, which is full of coconut oil. So we have chips, sweet potato chips, which are deep fat fried. We have pizza. We have chocolate. We have cake. We don't go without anything, but we are all processed foods free, sugar free, gluten free, dairy free, meat free, practically vegan. We have some local eggs from our vegan farmer, so we know that the eggs are good, are happy eggs, because he only has chickens so that they can eat the leftover veg.
Oh wow.
So that's the only eggs that we have, and that's the only, other than that, we're vegan. And people just cannot believe when they come and stay, they can't believe that they've been vegan for a weekend or for 5 days or for their retreat.
Wow, that's amazing. I I want Dom's book. And I want to come and stay in your house.
I know, you have to.
Yeah. I think I may have to come and visit. It sounds amazing. I've come to realize recently that I probably have an issue with sugar, and I know that I have since I was a little girl. I've always had a real thing for sweets,
And I can go on. I mean, I've had bulimia where I would go on massive, I'd have like 10 different types of sweets and eat them all within about 10 minutes and then have to get
Wow.
rid of them. And so I know that I've got that, and it's something that I'm looking at trying to control now, my sugar intake. It's really hard because you do have to just take that absolutely no processed food approach, don't you? Just everything.
Yeah.
I tried to do a 30, well, I did. I didn't try to do it. I did 30 days last year. And I found it, in terms of actually keeping to the decision and not having cravings, I found it easy in some ways. But as a vegan, trying to avoid processed food, it was really, it required an awful lot of careful planning, and things like stock cubes and bran flakes that you don't think there's no sweetness to them. You don't think that there's any sugar in them. But when you look, everything that comes in a box or a packet
Oh, everything,
has got
yeah.
sugar in it. It's quite shocking when you realize. And then you think, God, no wonder we've got so many health problems because
Oh, don't
everyone
get
is
started.
consuming.
That's another episode.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do that episode then, because it's something
It's a
that,
whole new episode.
yeah, I mean, the way that food can either heal us or kill us,
Oh,
it's
absolutely. Yeah.
astonishing. And our food supply is so corrupted with all this processing that it's quite scary, because we haven't got a clue what we're eating, but we can guarantee we're eating sugar in everything. So yeah,
I've been sugar-free for coming up for 3 years, and I've seen dramatic changes in my health in that time, and my energy, and I don't need as much sleep. I'm much happier. I had psoriasis for my whole life, and my psoriasis disappeared completely. Not had psoriasis since.
Wow.
I had a big ugly cyst on my chest, and it used to come up periodically, at least once or twice a year. It would come up and it would burst. I mean, it was a horrible thing, and it just disappeared within sort of 6 weeks. It was gone, and it's never come back.
Good
And
lad.
I mean, it's just so much. Dom's lost 3.5 stone through changing his diet. And we literally don't have anything processed. I mean, a cheat meal for us now. I mean, I do when I go to the pub, I'll eat chips and a salad. That's my kind of cheat food, because I'm mainly vegan, and it's I mean, it's difficult when you go out, but because we I mean, yeah, I mean, luckily I've got a clean chef husband, so it's very easy for me to eat really well. But we don't have any processed food in the house. Everything's cooked from scratch. And once you get into the swing of doing that, then it just becomes normal. You shopping in the supermarket is much easier because you don't go down any of the aisles other than the fresh aisle. I mean, and we go to our local farm shops in whenever we can, especially in summer when there is produce in the field. And but you get used to that. It's a new way of eating, but it is you get used to it. Just like not drinking and becoming sober becomes your new reality. So no processed foods becomes your new reality, and it's very easy. And again, just like not we were saying earlier about now being we're both here, and we look back at who we used to be, and we can't imagine being back there. Well, I'm like that with sugar and with processed foods. You just wouldn't ever catch me eating packaged foods anymore. And I sort of struggle when I go out to restaurants, which is why I've always loved chips, and chips has sort of been, I've always loved chips. So chips and a salad for me is the perfect balance when I go out, because I'm vegan, I'm getting my chips, and I've got the balance of the salad, and it works. It works.
And that's your not so clean treat that you have every now and then. Yeah. Chips and a salad. I love that.
Salad, I know, it's brilliant. I love it. I absolutely love it.
When I there's a coffee shop near me where I sometimes go, I might take Marcus there for a hot chocolate sometimes, and I go there with friends sometimes. And I mean, nothing on the menu is vegan, so I have to have chips and a salad. That's my, you know, if you're in a cafe, you always know you can have chips and a salad, don't you? Oh wow, well, you've inspired me. Is Dom's book actually, is it a book that he wrote and published?
It's an ebook, and he's got a second one that he's writing at the moment, and we're actually going to get it into the hard copy form as well.
Brilliant. So is that available through your website? Can I buy it through the web?
The book is available through the website, the Inner Guidance website, yeah.
Okay, I'll pop a link to that on the
Okay.
show notes, and I will get copy myself as well, because
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was talking with my brother about giving up sugar the other day, because he's trying to give up sugar at the moment, and I said, oh yeah, I think I'll join you on that. And of course I've done nothing about it, because it does, you can't just decide and stop when you've got a cupboard full of processed food, and you it needs it takes a little bit of thinking about, doesn't it? And
It does take a bit of thinking about that. You do need recipe books. You need to. I mean, Dom does clean cooking workshops, so you come and for the day and learn and watch him preparing some of the stuff. And there's a lot of batch cooking that you can do as well, and it is all down to organisation. When you want to be healthy, you need to know what you're going to eat so that you don't reach for rubbish.
Because that's probably most people's big downfall, isn't it? Is when you haven't been organized, and then all of a sudden you're really hungry. So you just like I just had a couple of pieces of toast because it was quick and easy. And you just go for whatever's quick and easy. And if what's quick and easy in your cupboard is a packet of crisps and a bar of chocolate, and you need something, that's what you're going to go for. Yeah. So yeah, I definitely got to come and visit you, because I need to do a clean eating workshop.
Perfect.
Oh wow! What this is incredible. From drug addiction to sugar addiction. I didn't see
Yeah,
this conversation coming.
we have people in the community who, and the thing with food addiction and sugar addiction is that it's not as easy, because you've got to learn to moderate. Because with drugs and alcohol, you can say, right, that's it, no more, it's out of my life completely, but you've still got to eat. So it's actually even more difficult, I think, with food and sugar addiction. It's more subtle, it's not as destructive perhaps, but it's more difficult because you've still got to eat.
You can't. Yes, absolutely. I think there are a lot of links I've noticed from different forums and Facebook groups that I've been sort of looking in, that a lot of people seem to say that when they give up drinking and smoking as well. I mean, it's a common thing among smokers, isn't it? You give up drinking or smoking and you compensate, you go to food as a replacement. So you're just displacing one addiction with another. And
Totally.
so for Friday night, you might, instead of getting a bottle of wine in, you're going to go and buy pizzas and chocolate instead. And it's so it's yes, it's again, it comes down to that problem of not dealing with the underlying issues.
Well, it's like having, so the alcohol is a blue plaster, and you take off the blue plaster and you put on a red plaster.
Yes. Just get into the wound and healing it, so you don't need a
Yeah,
plaster at
got
all.
to.
Wow, well, what an amazing an amazing life you've created for yourself here, Jo, and what amazing, work you're doing in helping others. Who inspires you most of all in your life? Is there anyone? I know you've got your mentor, and you've got people around you. Who would be your biggest inspiration?
I think my biggest inspiration is the Dalai Lama. Because his country's occupied and he's not been back, he's not able to go back. He left in 1959 and he's not able to go back, and yet he never ever expresses anger. He just feels compassion for the occupiers, and his grace, I just find such an inspiration. I think that it's and I just need to look at him and I feel better.
I think he's.
I think he reaches across all religions, all ages. Mm. He reaches everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who he is. And everybody respects him, and he just handles himself with such grace, and he inspires me. Yeah.
Yeah, he is a fantastic role model. He really is. I've got a book of his, the Art of Happiness, which is just a beautiful book. Yeah. Great example. Great. That's a brilliant person to mention. If you could give one sort of little nugget of wisdom to the listeners, can you give one kind of just like a little catchphrase or sort of thing that you could give now as a takeaway from this interview?
Anything is possible, and what you believe, you create.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So before we go, we talked earlier on about the music and the fact that this podcast is called Sober Living Rocks because of my love of rock music and my love of music in general. And you have a history of, and still do, of raving. I mean, you've been on Facebook doing yoga to rave music, and so I know that you love music as well. So could you share one piece of music that you would put on if you needed a bit of a lift, if you needed to sort of dance around the kitchen?
Yeah, it's a rave track from my rave days, which I absolutely love. It is by, and I'm just going to get it up here to make sure that I get it right. Where is it? Oh, I had it up earlier and now it's disappeared. Mm-hmm. It is by Gat Decor and it is called Passion.
Brilliant. Well, I can't say I've heard of that, but it might be one of those tracks that when I hear it, I'll recognise. I was never much of a raver. I was actually watching Trainspotting the other day, not the new film, the old film.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was never into rave because the idea of having to stay awake till 6 o'clock in the morning was just not, it just wasn't. And I was very much into the 60s and the Beatles and hippies, and that was my kind of, still is my kind of music.
Yeah.
So rave music, rave scene kind of completely passed me by, but all my friends went. But there's some of the music that I really love, and I did go to a few clubs, and I did really, when I allowed myself to enjoy it, I really enjoyed it, and I loved the music, the dancing. And I was listening to the soundtrack of Trainspotting the other day, and there was this little part of me that kind of, for a moment, wished I got into raving. Because I love dancing, I love music, and at the time, I love getting absolutely wasted as well. It would have been perfect.
The thing with rave music for me, and especially rave music on ecstasy, was that it was a journey. It took me to where meditation takes me. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of, I kind of feel like I've gone full circle with it all, because I was always searching for this high that I knew existed. I don't know how I knew that, but I always knew that this high existed, and I found it listening to rave music, being in a club, being on ecstasy, just shutting out the world and being in that space. Mm. Being in my truth. I mean, I was just, oh my God, I was high. I was so high. But unfortunately, it was not authentic. It was a chemical high. And now in my meditation, and certainly in my yoga as well, I experienced that exactly the same and better and more heightened in my meditation. So it's very much come full circle.
Yeah.
And I write about that in the second book, which I'm just finishing off at the moment, which is kind of the quantum sobriety method and approach in a book form. And I talk about that it feels full circle. I know that this was always where I was supposed to get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, you've taken an amazing path there that allows you to help others as well. It's incredible.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky. I feel very lucky to be able to have got my experience into something that I can deliver to others. I feel very, 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 very blessed.
Yeah, that's an amazing achievement. Well, thank you ever so much, Jo, for this interview today. I'm going to link in the show notes to your website, which is quantumsobriety.com and innerguidance.co.uk.
Yes.
Yes. And I will also include links to your Facebook and any other social media channels if you want to send them over to me.
Okay, I
Then
will do,
I
yeah.
know you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, and you said you're on Instagram as well, aren't you?
I am, but my presence is Facebook.
Okay.
I
Okay, so
concentrate
you
on
concentrate
Facebook.
on Facebook.
I do one thing well rather than all of them badly.
Very sensible. Yes, it's possible to get completely lost in social media, isn't it? All the different
Oh, but
channels
it's
that are
mindful.
available. Okay, well, I will link to all of those, and I am and to Dom's book and to your book, your first book as well, so that anyone that wants to follow up with you on any of this is going to be able to easily do that from here. So
Great.
thank you very, very much for your time today. It's been an
Thank
absolute joy
you.
to speak to you, and I will be in touch soon about coming to visit and learning how to cook
Yes.
clean and
Got
everything
to.
else. Yes. Thanks, Jo.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Sober Living Rocks podcast. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. You can find the show notes at soberliving.rocks/podcasts. If you like the show, please subscribe and leave a rating on iTunes and share this with your friends, as it will help me to share the message that sober living rocks to those who need to hear it. If you have a question you would like me to answer on the podcast, or if you would like to apply to be a guest to the show, please email me at rockcheck@soberliving.rocks. Thank you again for listening, and I will speak to you again very soon. Keep rocking. Bye.